It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Too often, a generation of older caregivers is not asking for help when it is needed. The reasons vary. Pride, as well as not knowing what resources are available or how to attain them. Whatever the reasons for not seeking help might be, 9 people were killed by their caregivers in 2013, including a tragic murder-suicide that took place in the Mon Valley borough of Portview. Post-Gazette freelance writer Tina Calabro chronicled that story and the issues it raises about the stress faced by some older caregivers, and she joins us now in Studio A. Tina Calabro, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
Fill us in first on this incident involving an elderly caregiver of a middle-aged son with developmental disabilities. What can you tell us about this situation?
Well, it was a situation that happened last December. A father, 78 years old, killed his son with a rifle and then killed himself. The son was 52 years old. He was a man with a developmental disability. And it's in this very small borough called Portview, which is in the Mon Valley, a very close-knit community. And the incident, horrible incident, was very surprising to the community. A lot of people knew the family. People I interviewed said virtually everybody knew the family. The mother and father had been there their whole lives. The wife had died a year earlier, and people were saying that the event that led up to this murder-suicide had something to do with the wife passing away, that the father was on his own. He was a widower. He's taking care of his son.
And these are people from a generation during which a lot of times the child rearing or caregiving responsibilities, or at least the organization of that, fell to the responsibility of the wife or the woman in the family.
Absolutely. The son was born in 1961, so this is an era before any rights for people with disabilities. There was no right to education. Institutions were still operating, and the traditional family set up with the woman taking the lead in the caregiving. And the father was a steel worker. The mother was more or less a stay-at-home mom. And so they had done that from the beginning for 50-some years. And then when the wife died, things seemed to deteriorate very rapidly and leading up to this terrible incident.
And so here was this man who had just lost his wife, and he's dealing with that, and there may have been some other issues involved, but for whatever reason, he was depressed, and his health was failing, and he was suddenly concerned about who would look after his son when he was gone, and his son would be left without either of his parents who had cared for him all of his life.
Exactly. And people that I interviewed in the community that knew him very well, his friends in the community were the mayor, the police chief, the people at the fire station, because he had been a volunteer firefighter for his whole adult life. And so all of those people that he knew, he had expressed to them that he had become very concerned about who was going to take care of his son, because there's some sense that his health was failing. They didn't know specifically what was his problem, but that there was something and that he was worried. But what happened was the people in the community, even though they were public service type people, they didn't actually know what to tell him or what to do. They thought about helping him. They probably offered to help, but they didn't know specifically what to do, and that was a real problem.
And the Lipishok murder-suicide in Portview came and went in December as a local news story, including a number of follow-up articles about the resources that were available to the family. Why did you think that a more in-depth story about this incident was needed?
Well, yes, I did. I was very struck by this incident for many reasons. I mean, it was a horrible thing to think about happening. You know, that any parent would feel so without options that they would feel that their only option was to kill their child. That's a horrible thought. But going beyond that, I felt that it was more than just saying where can people get resources, which was a very important thing to cover. But more importantly, are there other people out there that are in this situation? You know, this happens, you know, this murder-suicide type thing happens fairly regularly, but it's not what most people do. But we do know that people struggle behind closed doors, that they are silently struggling. And what is the situation of these people? And is our public system addressing their need for information and providing services?
The story says that the Lipischak family was well known in their community. As you said, neighbors and friends did not know how to respond to the father's concerns about his son's future. What did the leaders of the community that you interviewed say that they learned from this incident?
Yes, both the police chief and the mayor said that they learned, you know, quite a deal from this incident. They were devastated by what happened because they considered themselves a very good friend of the family. Now, they didn't know the son very well, which also speaks to the era that the son grew up in as well.
And how so?
Well, he was not very well integrated, even though the friends of the father they felt that they were very close to the father, but they all said—
Was that because the parents were feeling a need to protect their son or—
Yeah, that they took a lot of the responsibility. Mm-hmm. Whenever the son was seen in public, he was always with the mother or the father, and the parents didn't seem to expect the community to have welcoming arms to the son. And the community people that I talked to, even though they seem like wonderful people, but they didn't really see that either, that it was there was some reaching out that they could have done, or they could have, you know, maybe known the son a little bit better. They just sort of accepted that as that was just the way it was, that the son was kept at home, that when we went to visit the family, he was off in another room and I didn't really know him very well.
In fairness to the parents, could there have been something that might have happened early on just that in some way exemplifies the attitudes of the earlier time? We mentioned the era of the 60s, which when the son would have been a young man, and could they have been protecting him from some kind of ridicule that he might have endured or that they perceived he might endure in the general population, just interacting with average citizens in the town, simply because of the type of teasing that people could get away with in those days that they might not get away with today?
I didn't get that sense from the community people that I talked to that there was any negatives that the family had experienced, but more of a protectiveness. Mm. And I think that comes with the era. There might have been some sense of shame in a way of or feeling that, you know, he's going to be rejected or he's not going to be able to be integrated. I don't know. I did attempt to talk to members of the family, their extended family. This was an only child. But no one in the extended family was interested in talking with me.
We're talking with Post-Gazette freelance writer Tina Calabro, who chronicled a story of a tragic murder-suicide that occurred in the town of Portview in December, which speaks to the stress that elderly caregivers sometimes feel in caring for their children as they grow older and reach middle age. The article discusses media representation of the victims in these type of incidents. For example, that headlines highlighting the quote that the incident was an act of love. It seemed to validate his father and imply that his son's life had lesser value or little value. Some people might dismiss such criticism as simple political correctness, but how did the people that you interviewed look at it?
I think this was a very important aspect of the story, is the way that the story was represented in the media and talked about among people. The mayor of the town is the person who said that this was an act of love. This was a quote that came from him in the initial stories about the incident.
That the idea was that if either the mother had died, if the father had died, this middle-aged, developmentally disabled individual had survived his parents, that in some way his life would not have been a quality life without them to look after him.
Right.
Supposedly.
That was the view of the father. It's not that everybody agrees that that was the right view, mm-hmm. but that was the view of the father. They were pretty well convinced that that is the way he thought, that there were no options for him. And that
he was doing what was best for his son, so he
right,
thought.
Right, that he decided this was what was best. The problem with the highlighting of that act of love is it falls very short when it's the main way offered to people to understand the incident. Because, yes, no one's questioning that the father loved the son. Yes, he loved his son. Yes, he was, you know, for whatever reason, he thought he was doing the best thing. But let's look at that more and say, what does it mean when we say something's an act of love, and then we just move on from that and say, okay, well, you know, how sad, but let's move on. This was a person, there was a victim in this incident. And in media representation, not just here in Pittsburgh, but in many of these kinds of situations, the victim is absent from the coverage. For instance, the focus would be on the caregiver, like what were his burdens, what were his thoughts, but very little said about, well, who was the victim, as if the victim is an abstraction and not a real person. Like, this is a real person. And
he had interests, he had things in life that he enjoyed.
Yes. And then there's a lot of assumptions about, even though we, through the media, we didn't get to know Mickey Lipischak. We didn't know initially very much about him. I wanted to find out more, and I did. But there's assumptions made. Well, you say developmentally disabled, you get a mental image of that, and you say, okay, I get it. But you don't get it, because developmentally disabled, that's a label, but you don't know the person. So these kinds of quick and easy ways of talking about it, they fall very short of understanding the victim, and they also imply the devaluation of the victim.
So when a crime like this occurs, and in this case, the mayor of the town, well-meaning as he might have been, says this was an act of love, it downplays the problematic aspect of this?
Well, he just said it. I mean, it's what he really thought.
A lot of people may think that, but by thinking that, does it sometimes make it seem like this is less of a problem than it should be perceived?
Absolutely. I think the problem is when people latch on to a phrase like that and use it to define a situation.
And the article has been widely republished, your work reposted, including in the Philadelphia Inquirer, and a similar incident happened in the Philadelphia area last summer. What kind of feedback have you gotten, Tina?
Well, the most frequent feedback is that people are appreciative to have this issue talked about, because the issue of older caregivers of that generation taking care of middle-aged adults with disabilities is a real issue. One of the comments that really stuck with me, because it was reposted and republished so many places, is they said, I wonder how many Lipischaks there are in Nebraska. Like, that was one of them, one of the places that had read the story. It's everywhere. There are people in these situations. Maybe they don't kill the person in their care, but they're there. And so it was just the airing of the issue and really looking at the older caregivers and saying, what's happening with them, and who's looking out for them. So that was one. Another frequent response to it was, I need help. I personally received emails from people telling me of complex situations that they were having, and how can I help them find help with them? And then I would refer those questions to Achieva and other organizations who could take it from there. And I think that's a real benefit of going deeper into these issues, is that people that are personally having problems, then they have something to latch onto and try to get some help if they think they're alone. I think there was a lot of debate here and there about the issue of this act of love, and people that felt very strongly that, hey, this really isn't a murder. This is an act of love. I can see this. You know, I can understand this father. And then, you know, of course, on the other side, people saying, wait a minute, you know, this is a murder. A person has a right to their life. And for somebody to choose to end their life, that that's not right. So, there was that. And then I think finally, and this is a very important issue, and I know you'll be talking about it, is our system of services really up to the challenge of meeting the needs of these caregivers? And or does it fall short? Is it unresponsive? Had this father called the system, would he have been connected with support? Would he have gotten it?
And what would you say the takeaway from all of this is in Portview right now? How are the people there coming to grips with all of this what's it been, 8 months, 9 months now since this happened?
Well, I think the police chief said it very well when he said that the community felt that it needed to change, that it didn't know enough about how to help its neighbors, and that had to change. They had to become more aware.
And I believe we have a caller on the line. It's 412-246-2002 to join the conversation. Tina, do you mind taking a question?
No, not at all.
All right. Well, let's go to the phones. And
Hello?
Have David in the South Hills. David, you are on with freelance writer Tina Calabro.
Hi there. Not to diminish the tragedy of the situation, but I do think there was one egregious error in the reporting, and that is the statement that there were no educational rights for the young man when he was growing up because my mother taught special ed with the Allegheny Intermediate Unit 3 starting from the early 60s for over 20 years, and I know that they had a requirement for anybody from profoundly retarded up to have educational opportunities until the age of 21, and that they had excellent facilities in Allegheny County, best in the state, for providing that up until the time where the mainstreaming came into effect, and that's when they downsized the AIU system. And I think it's just it doesn't quite complete the picture correctly by saying there were no services or there were no opportunities available during this person's growing up.
Go ahead, Tina.
Right. I definitely see what you're saying. The law that is called the Right to Education Act, it was Education for All Handicapped Act was the original title of it. Today it's called the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. It was passed in 1975. So the actual right to education for every student was actually made into law at that time. Now, there was special education before that time, but it was not guaranteed. And it was really optional. And in the case of people that had significant disabilities, the school district was within their rights to not accept the child into their school. They were not required.
Post-Gazette freelance reporter Tina Calabro joining us here in Studio A. Thank you so much for sharing your reporting with us and your insights into this very important issue.
Thank you.
And coming up, we'll continue our conversation about this story by talking about efforts to prevent future tragedies. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We've been discussing the issue of a generation of older caregivers not asking for help when it's needed. This may be due in part to pride as well as not knowing what resources are available or how to obtain them. The issue really came to light after a murder-suicide that took place in the Mon Valley borough of Portview involving an older caregiver of a middle-aged son with developmental disabilities. In this segment, we're addressing what can be done to help caregivers with Janine Schultz, Director of Advocacy and Family Support for Achieva, a nonprofit organization that provides lifelong support and services for individuals with disabilities and their families in southwestern Pennsylvania. Janine Schultz, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Good afternoon, and thank you for having me.
Our pleasure. And you can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is ESSPGH@WESA.FM. And you can reach us on Twitter at ESSPGH, hashtag EPLive. Again, our number, 412-246-2002. Janine Schultz with Achieva. What can people take from this incident. We were talking earlier with Tina Calabro, who reported this for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. She talked about the takeaway for people in Port View, but for people in general all over Pittsburgh, the state of Pennsylvania, and throughout the country, what are the lessons that can be learned from this tragic murder, suicide, and other incidents like this?
I think when you are when you have a family member in your community, it's a really good thing to reach out to look at community inclusion and integration. For this family here and the tragedy that happened, when you look at the age of the caregivers, it's really hard. There are resources across the state in every county. Every county has an intake line. And actually, the intake line for Allegheny County here, should you have an individual with an intellectual disability that you would like to get them registered, you can do so at the age of 3. And that number is 412-253-1250. Or if you don't know if you should be registering your family member, at a minimum, give them a call and ask them the questions. There's resources out there, but how do you get the information into the hands of families? And when you look at the age of the family here, of the caregivers, you know, what were they told when their son was born? Was it that it was best to, you know, put their son in an institution? That was something that was common years ago. It doesn't really happen today, but we don't know. It might have happened. Maybe it didn't happen. Maybe they just chose to keep their son at home. So when you look at, did the family have the resources to register their son? Did they? We have no idea. If they did and they chose not to do it, was it because were they afraid that if they gave their son's information to some sort of a system that they would take their son away and their son would end up in an institution? A lot of the caregivers that we talk to, that is a real fear for them. So a lot of aging caregivers have chosen to keep their family members at home. Today, with younger caregivers, that isn't necessarily the case. You know that supports and services are out there. They are a little bit more savvy with technology, with getting some information, where an older caregiver might not even have a computer. So how do you get that information into the hands of those aging caregivers?
And are there other characteristics that older caregivers share that are important to think about here?
Well, I think it's, you know, it's their pride. It's, you know, they want to care for their sons and daughters that are out there. It is, they, you know, it's their responsibility, and they don't look outside for any additional supports and services often.
So there are resources out there for families like this family in Portview. What resources or services might have helped this family? What could Richard Lipischak, for example, have done? What could his plan have been?
Well, I think, you know, I think it's an outreach to the community for that community acceptance and inclusion. You want to make sure that individuals with intellectual disabilities are registered within the system, because if the system doesn't know that you're out there, how do they know that you need supports and services? And the supports and services can vary. It can be maybe a habilitative aid coming into the home to provide some additional supports. Maybe it's some respite for the caregivers themselves to just get away for an hour, a day, a weekend, whatever that they need. And it can, you know, if the individual themselves wants to go and live in their own, wherever they choose to live, their own apartment, a home, a group home, whatever that setting is, there are dollars out there for the supports and services based off of the urgency of the need. So we have people in the state of Pennsylvania waiting for supports and services. So when we look at the aging caregivers, right now in Allegheny County, over the age of 60, we have 226 people waiting on what we call a waiting list for those dollars for supports and services. And if you look at the waiting list just in Allegheny County in general, not necessarily the aging caregiver, we have 336 on emergency, 554 on critical, and 386 in planning. So that brings us to a total of 1,276 individuals in Allegheny County just waiting for supports and services. We have approximately, 13,000 statewide. And again, it's based off of the urgency. There's not enough dollars out there right now to support everybody. So what the system does is they break it down into the most urgent people, and those are the individuals that they really look at and target for those support dollars.
Why do you think that in this case the Lipishok family did not know about the services or simply did not want to use them?
Oh, that's a tough question. You know, if they didn't know about it, you know, did they use technology? What was their support of their extended family and community? Were they tapped into parent support groups? We have parent-to-parent of PA. We have Achieva. We have different agencies out there that provide all kind of different support. So if they weren't tapped into any of those, you know, how do you know what you don't know? And how do you know where to go to get those supports and services? So did they have a computer? Did they use technology? A lot of the aging caregivers do not. So it's tough. And if they did know about the services, you know, and they chose not to register their son, was it because they were afraid of the setting that he would go into? And it's really, you know, Tina had referred to, you know, maybe they wanted to really keep him safe. And they thought that that was the best way to do it. But families, you know, really need to know that we have a system out there that has some supports and services. You can register your son or daughter. Every single county has an intake and registration. If you don't know what it is, you can call one of the ARCs if you Google the ARCs across the state, you call them, you call their advocacy department, they can get you to the intake and registration. That is a really important first step, because until your son or daughter is registered, the system doesn't know that you're out there. Maybe you don't need supports and services today. That doesn't mean that you shouldn't register. So register starting at the age of 3. And whenever you need supports and services, the thing with registration, the one thing that it gets you is a supports coordinator. It's sort of the gatekeeper to what your needs are along your journey. At a minimum, that supports coordinator meets with a family and an individual once a year. Then once funding becomes intact, based on the urgency of it, those check-ins from the supports coordinators happen a little more often. So as things change and services need to be increased, you have somebody that's on top of that that can help you through that process.
We're talking with Janine Schultz. She is Director of Advocacy and Family Support for Achieva, a nonprofit organization that provides lifelong support and services for individuals with disabilities and their families in southwestern Pennsylvania. You can join the conversation at 412-246-2002. Let's go to the phones. We have Rebecca in Pittsburgh. Rebecca, welcome. You're on with Janine Schultz.
Hi, this is Rebecca Tyers from Achieva Family Trust. Thanks for having me.
Oh, well, welcome, Rebecca. Good to have you in on the conversation.
Thank you. The reason I was calling in is to offer to the families that are listening a new service that Achieva Family Trust, a division of Achieva, is actually offering. The United Way of Allegheny County recently recognized the need for more supports for senior caregivers and their adult disabled children. And one thing that everyone recognizes is that nobody wants to talk about death and finances, but when you are caring for an adult individual who's disabled, there's a lot of planning, especially with estate planning and wills and trusts, that need to be taken care of. So our new project that we're just launching, we just started in July, is to work with families on futures planning, so working with them to create wills and trusts, to talk to them about the types of services and to be a concierge to them, really just to help them find the resources and the support that they need to feel comfortable moving forward with estate planning, and also to feel that they are confidently providing care and services for their loved one even after their own death.
So there are certainly some options that people have.
And that's very important, because a lot of these families, I myself come from a family, my older sister is intellectually and somewhat physically disabled. And my father died years ago. My mother is a senior citizen caring for my older sister on her own. And there is this mentality that it's my family. I'll take care of it myself. We're not letting anyone in. And there's nothing wrong with that. But it's not as realistic of a long-term plan, especially when there are all of these supports out there to help families. And when they're not aware of them, as Janine said, you don't know what you don't know. So, and sometimes you don't know it until you're in crisis mode. And that's the main point of our project, is to keep families from having to be in that crisis, and keeping the, you know, maybe the siblings of the person with a disability from having this all, you know, dumped in their lap while they're grieving the death of their own parent.
Right, and actually, that's a really good point. So if you set up the futures planning, you have that plan, and you even transition your son or daughter at whatever that age is into their new setting, they become comfortable when you as a parent, you're still there as a support. Because what you don't want is, you don't want an individual to lose their family, then potentially lose their home. So everything is really uprooted. So you want to make that transition as smooth as possible. So if you have that plan in place, you can, you know, you work with a team of people to figure out when you want to do things, when it's best, and it's your choice. Nobody is going to tell you when you should do something. It is really the individual and the family's decision on that plan, and when they take those steps and when they make those moves, it's a much smoother transition for the individual.
Well, Rebecca, thank you for calling in and adding to the conversation. We appreciate it. And we are talking with Janine Schultz. She is Director of Advocacy and Family Support for Achieva, a nonprofit organization that provides lifelong support and services for individuals with disabilities and their families in southwestern Pennsylvania. You can join the conversation at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. In the time that we have left, also email ESSPGH at WESA.FM, on Twitter at ESSPGH, hashtag EPLive. Janine, how many families are there in Allegheny County where there is an elderly caregiver and an adult with a disability?
So right now, for individuals that are actually registered, there are 226, but those are just with the families that are registered. We have absolutely no idea how many aging caregivers are out there that aren't registered. From an advocacy perspective, if they're not registered, we don't hear from those families until there is a crisis. And then we really look at working with the county, the supports coordination agencies, to see how quickly we can get an individual the funding that they need, being that they're in crisis mode.
Do you see, as people become more and more enlightened, and things have changed over the generations, certainly education-wise, opportunity-wise, support-wise, and so as society has changed, as attitudes have changed, do you see this becoming maybe less of a problem going forward into the future because of parents being more tech savvy, more open to the idea of seeking support that's out there, knowing that there's more support out there?
Well, I would hope that answer would be yes, but time will tell. We still have families that don't use technology, and they don't know where to turn. So, you know, we're continually thinking about different ways that we can reach families, whether that's different trainings, webinars, what type of outreach. Support groups are a great resource for families. Families helping families. That is really where it has started. But hopefully, yes.
And just in the wake of recent events and what brought us to this issue in the first place, which was the story, the tragic murder-suicide that took place in the Mon Valley borough of Port View involving an older caregiver of a middle-aged son with developmental disabilities. In the wake of this, what would you say to families? What is the most important thing for them to know?
I really think that they need to know that we have a system in place that can and will provide supports and services. Yes, we don't have enough money right now to fund everyone's needs. It is based off of how urgent their needs are. But if you don't register your family member, the system will never know that they're out there until, again, you're in crisis mode. So, one, everybody should again, register. And if I can give that number again, it is 412-253-1250. That's the intake number for Allegheny County. If you're in another county across the state and you don't know what that resource is, that number is, if you call your local ARC, they can provide that number to you. But one, they should register. Two, know that there are supports and services that are out there. And
I should mention that'll be on our website, too, at WESA.FM. We'll have a link to that information.
Perfect. Thank you. But there's supports and services out there in the community as a whole. I think as inclusion happens in school and integration into society, what people are really looking for is acceptance. People want to live out in the community with the supports that they need. They want to choose their neighbors. They want to choose their mates. And hopefully we are headed towards a society of acceptance from everybody.
Let's take one last call from Mary. Mary, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. You're on with Janine Schultz.
Hi, I'm with Computing Workshop, and we are an organization that was founded originally as part of CMU, and we're now an independent nonprofit, but we were founded to provide educational and vocational opportunities for people with differences, the word I like to use instead of disabilities, particularly cognitive differences such as autism. And I think that the way funding is provided, not specifically through the county, but across the board, has the effect of keeping people more disabled sometimes, so that there have been times when we have helped someone to find a job that they could work at. Someone who was making money caring for them discouraged them from taking it. So basically, there's a lot of money to be made sending people to sheltered workshops and keeping them doing less, when often people could do more and want to do more and don't get the encouragement. So even though what it says in the law is that we are doing person-centered things and people and families are making decisions, that is not always the case. The people and the families don't always know what's available. And I think we need to change this. Not everyone is going to be completely independent, but people may be more independent than they are at this time, but there are obstacles to that happening.
All right. Well, certainly Mary makes a valid point.
And Mary, if there are individuals out there that want to work, you can look at work incentives. AHEAD, actually located here in the South Side, they provide some counseling for work incentives. So it's a good way for an individual to understand what those incentives are. How do they work more, get more money, and keep their benefits? But that is one of many organizations that can help an individual who wants to go out and work to get more money, to live the life that they choose to live.
Again, thank you for that call, Mary, and thank you, Janine Schultz, who is Director of Advocacy and Family Support for Achieva, nonprofit organization providing lifelong support and services for individuals with disabilities and their families in southwestern Pennsylvania. Thanks for joining us on Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you for having me.
It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.